A63. Number 8B.
As far as I'm informed at the present status of knowledge, that they say, well, there was that Big Bang about 15, 16 billion years ago, and the universe expands. How long will it expand? It will expand for another 15 or 16 billion years, so that after about 35, 36 billion years, they change those billions a bit higher. It doesn't really matter very much. But the point is that after, say, counting from the moment of the Big Bang, there comes somewhere after 30 or 40 billion years a point where it is no more going to expand, but where it turns backward, where it folds again with it inside. Huh? It recedes. Huh? It recedes. And therefore, from that point on, you see, space will become smaller, time will go backward. We cannot think how time can go backward. Huh? We can only think that time goes forward. Our brain is not built that way, that we can think that time is going backward, but it does go backward. And so that the universe falls, so to say, together within itself, becomes denser and denser, until it becomes so dense, like in the black holes, that no light goes anymore out of matter, that it can no more escape matter, like light does escape from the sun or so, and it gets, therefore you get those black holes, and that finally, after then another, I don't know how many billion years, you are right back to the Big Bang, to the point of nothingness, and the whole universe disappears again into nothingness. Oh, that's a nice prospect, but it doesn't trouble us so much, because another 50 billion years is a bit long, huh? So we have time to think about that. But what I was interested, naturally, was that one of these experts on it, I think it was Wheeler or so, they were asking the question, now, when there was that Big Bang, from where did it come from? Again, the question, what is the cause? And they'd say, well, there is no cause for the Big Bang, because it came out of nothing, so nothing was the cause, but naturally that isn't quite satisfactory for the human mind, and therefore said something interesting. I don't know how far they have gone in that way. They have said, our universe is only a universe that has been translated from an other universe. That there is an other universe, and that other universe has brought about the Big Bang and has brought our universe into being. As if he would say what we say when we are considering the chart, that we say, and we can see that the higher level can always translate itself to a lower level and bring forth phenomena which are foreign to the higher level, but still have the origin in the higher level, what they call another space. What is a healing in Christian Science? The healing in Christian Science is actually nothing else but that. That it is a spiritual realm operating, and as it translates itself to the human, to another plane, it manifests itself, so to say, as a Big Bang. It manifests itself that something happens on the material plane through the impact of the spiritual, through the impact of the spiritual realm, or the spiritual space. And therefore, what is, so to say, the birth of mortals? It's a kind of a Big Bang. It's a kind of a Big Bang because there is, on a higher realm, a law of creativity that is absolutely spiritual, but translated to a bodily level. It acts as creative ability, like a mortal, like the bringing into life out of mortal, out of dead matter, something, the Big Bang, something happens, and you have living matter. We can actually see, and this naturally is then the solution to the whole question of evolution, that we can see that as long as we are used to think on one dimension only, and that's what mankind has been used to think, always on one dimension, that if we never find an answer to the big question. What do I mean with thinking on one dimension? That we always have one dimension within which we find the answer to cause and effect, a dimension where we can reason from cause to effect. But that is a one-dimensional universe. And mankind as a whole, up to now, has always been trained only to think in a one-dimensional universe, and that dimensional universe from cause to effect. Whereas we can see, especially when we know the levels and the chart, that there are many dimensions, and that these dimensions interact with each other. So that the spiritual realm, the spiritual level, the spiritual dimension, has an impact on the material universe, on the human universe. And that impact on the human universe is called creation. Something happens. The moment out of the blue, out of nothingness, seems something to happen. It doesn't come out of nothing. It comes from a higher level. And it is a translated form of a higher level. Therefore, this explains Dunhuis' whole theory. Namely, he has a lot of question marks and says, on my level of thinking, namely on the level of thinking of the material laws, there is no answer. And therefore he feels that there must be a universe that is higher than our universe, that there is a realm that is above our realm, and that therefore the impact of that higher realm on our realm is really that which triggers off the law of evolution. So, we have considered that first point of mind, where we see, yes, we cannot deny, humanly, we cannot deny that there was suddenly a moment where there was a beginning of life, where suddenly out of dead matter, we suddenly had living matter, which naturally goes against the law of nature. Because in the law of nature, only like produces like. Like does never produce unlike. Therefore, we must see that there are other laws, namely vertical laws. Not laws on the same level from cause to effect, but there are vertical laws, laws of translation from one level to another level. And therefore, if we see that, if we see, yes, there is the divine mind knowing everything, the divine mind as the one intelligent, the creative intelligence over everything, that can translate itself to a human material level as a Big Bang or as the first living cell, so that there is a terrific intelligence at work that brings forth that first beginning of life. Did I make myself more or less clearly understood? See? That the moment we take a multi-dimensional universe into consideration, and not just a one-dimensional, namely the three-dimensional is a one-dimensional universe, and always only think in a three-dimensional universe, we can never answer these questions. There are more dimensions to be considered. As a second point, he takes in the fact that suddenly the evolution of life had one direction, a very clear-cut direction, namely always towards more and more complex forms. This is quite an enigma to the scientists, because the scientists, in general, have one well-honored law that has up to now never been gainsaid, that has never been disproved. That's the second law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics says that in the long run, everything develops in the direction of simpler, until it has no more diversity. But everything, you know, has one direction towards destruction, towards death. Everything ends in nothing, in death. Whatever you take, a plant, a tree, for a little time, it unfolds and unfolds, and then the moment of no return is reached, and then it goes back. And it ends always in nothing. That's the second law of thermodynamics, says that there is one direction that is irreversible, namely the direction towards an equilibrium of chemical and physical action, that there is nothing going on but just death, complete death, death of action, death of power, death of everything. And the evolution that we witness over all those 3 billion years, that's quite a long time, 3 billion years, the evolution which we witness disprove that and say, no, actually what happened is just the other way around, that there is always a drive towards greater and greater complexity and not towards singleness. So we have here a great sense that in being there must be spirit, and the nature of spirit is to unfold and to evolve and to diversify, to rarefy, to make more and more complex forms, bringing forth more and more species and subspecies, so that it goes against, really, that well-honored law of thermodynamics. The qualities which he brings out, therefore, in his book, they are not my interpretation. What he brings out in his book, therefore, he says, the wonder of wonder is that there is evolution instead of involution, that there is evolution, and that that evolution is an irreversible process, that it cannot be reversed. It always goes on. Never reversed itself. And therefore, that it always shows more and more diversification. Now, if we take these ideas, we know from our study of the synonyms that they all symbolize spirit. Can you see that? So, just make a note, these qualities which he brings out here are not mine. I only gave the synonymous term to it and said, we will call all those qualities like evolution, irreversible progress, diversification, we call that with one symbol, spirit. He saw a third step that he could not, that natural science cannot explain, namely what he calls the actual result of this long process of evolution, namely man and the human brain, the sudden appearance of a brain that suddenly builds a bridge between the corporeality and incorporeality, that suddenly, apparently through corporeality like the brain, one was able to have incorporeal concepts, thinking. He said, this is a period where suddenly creation freed itself, we have a sense of freedom, freed itself from corporeality. And there suddenly the incorporeal aspect of being shifted into focus. And he said that then, at that moment, man became aware of its own identity. All terms that we would see as symbolizing soul. So we just can say he was talking about soul manifesting itself in the line of evolution. He had a fourth stage, which he called the birth of thought and of moral and spiritual ideas. So suddenly with his thinking cap, man began to formulate abstract ideas, moral ideas, spiritual ideas. And we feel very much how man, the distance that man now has from the material world, that he suddenly a new world opened up, the world of thought, the world of the immaterial, the world of thinking, the world of ideas, the world of abstract concepts. See, that's what the tree can't do, that's what the animals can't do, and so on. Suddenly there arose out of corporeality an incorporeal universe, and men began to reason. He used those terms like that man suddenly saw that he must have a relationship to God because he became in the third day aware of its identity and therefore of its existence. Therefore he asked himself, where am I in that universe? He began to see that something higher than himself was working and is at work, so man tried then to find his relationship to God. That's the beginning of all the religions, primitive religions, the beginning of worship of these deities. He said then suddenly man realized that he needed obedience to that God, that there is a sense of government in the universe, of harmony, coordination, spiritual power, all that he has in his own text. And we just can give to all those qualities the term principle. So we can see that at one stage, suddenly the ideas of principle began to shine through the mortal universe. And suddenly out of a universe that did not know anything, suddenly a universe of knowing itself and knowing how to think arose. See, that's quite interesting. People now go to the moon and to investigate Mars and Jupiter and so on. They see there is no thinking there. Why has thinking appeared? Why hasn't it been there too? So it gives a sense of that there must have happened an interference of principle that interfered with that dead matter, and therefore, through the impact of principle, brought forth the conditions for a thinking universe. Yes, then a fifth point, which is so interesting for us, the point that he calls the spontaneous but independent development of these ideas in different parts of the terrestrial globe. It's what we call multiple discoveries, that phenomena which is not an exception but a rule, that when a new idea is precipitating on mankind, that it always precipitates itself through more than one channel, through two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight channels, so that independent of from one another, people are beginning to think about the same new idea which one has never been thinking about, that inventions are always more or less multiple inventions, that new discoveries are usually multiple discoveries, that it isn't just one person that is then a channel for a new discovery, but that all over the world there are people that are finding a solution. Usually it is so that perhaps then only one out of the many then afterwards stands out, because perhaps he has been the one who published his findings first before the others, or who perhaps could describe the finding clearer than perhaps the others. But underneath is always a great field of multiple discovery. We have wonderful examples about it, like the integral calculus or the differential calculus that was discovered at the same time by Newton and by Leibniz, at the same time without that they corresponded with each other. And looking back, you find that all over the place. I remember one of the nice points rather of recent years is actually the discovery of the cybernetic law. And we always call Professor Wiener as the father of cybernetics. If one reads about the historical aspect of his discovery, it's quite interesting. See, he discovered it right at the end of World War II, begin and afterwards, just at that period when World War II ended. And he knew that somebody else was also working on it and also finding these ideas. But he was more clever than the other. Namely, he knew that the others didn't have a printer that was printing quick enough, and so he sent his manuscript to France, who had the printing press laid there idle, because, you know, because of the war, nobody printed books at that time, nobody had money to print them. So he printed his books in France, and it was done quicker. So sometimes there are just a nice little trick behind it, and then, yes?
I just wanted to mention something about the discovery of relativity, which everybody associates with Einstein. Actually, there was a mathematician, a Dutch mathematician named Lorentz, who actually had worked out all the equations about 20 years before, and he said that for all the discrepancies they found in thermodynamic laws to be resolved, that this would have to be reality, and he sort of dismissed it as a construct. But then Einstein came along and said, this is not a construct, this is the way it really is.
Yes.
And made that leap into another realm.
Mm-hmm.
So
to speak. Yes.
So it happens in many different ways.
Yes.
Innumerable examples.
Yes. Yeah. So this is an interesting phenomenon. Huh? And we have it all over the place. And I'm glad you mentioned Einstein. I wanted to mention it, but I didn't know the name anymore of that one that was earlier. So I didn't mention it. Because usually they come along and say, but Einstein, it's still a belief that Einstein was the only one that was thinking along that line. He wasn't. Actually, it was also some kind of a multiple discovery. And the first step, well, practically everything. We have a book, or I know of a book, that tells us about all these examples, many of the examples. I was astonished to see that all these big discoveries, which we think were the work of a single mind, actually were not the work of a single. There is always a kind of a atmosphere ready, as if the age is pregnant with an idea. Huh? And then through one, perhaps it shines through perhaps a bit clearer or a bit quicker than through the other, but it shows it's an idea. It's not people that really are then bringing forth an idea. They are only transparent for something that the divine idea wants to bring forth, so that we get the feeling It's the divine idea that has a plan, that has a telefinalistic plan, and says, now the time is ready for this and this. Now I've tried to find those transparent personalities, those transparent mentalities through which I can shine through. So this is showing here too that he said one could see that all over the world it was always when a new concept was forming itself that they appeared independent of each other. So he concludes from there the following ideas. He concludes that being is of the nature of spontaneity, you see, not of cause and effect, of the nature of spontaneity, of the nature of simultaneity, instantaneity, and individuality. You hear these terms and you just say, well, this is life. These are the ideas which we have always associated with the term life. Therefore, making here really a break with that concept that everything develops in a one-dimensional universe. I have to be careful when I say a one-dimensional universe. Actually, that one-dimensional universe we live in is three-dimensional, but we only take that three-dimensional universe as the one universe, the one we think about it, whereas we should see that there are other universes. Therefore, that what happens within one universe is not just the law of cause and effect that is happening within that self-contained universe. It is always something that comes from another universe as a law of translating and what the Bible calls the Holy Ghost, and interfering, so to say, into the law of cause and effect universe and say, stop it. I can bring forth an idea without cause. I'm the law of spontaneity. And that's something we are not trained to think. And we have to get to know that. Because in being, we have much more to think in the law of spontaneity than in the law of causality. But I must stop here.